You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. David, quite a lot of announcements from the Stock Exchange News Service this morning. I've had Sirius, PPC, Barlow World, not only their results, but an unbundling proposition.
Yeah.
What else have we had as well? Astral Foods. Anything else come out after that? Sorry, I've been a bit involved in other matters. But what else has come out?
Most of this is that also... Not of great importance is Ethos, which is Brait announced that Ethos has been taken over or merging with an American concern. So there wasn't really anything in that one. But I mean, overall, look, a lot of these businesses, Netcare, PPC, Astral, and Barlow World, did publish fairly intensive or fairly detailed trading updates a week ago. So I don't think there's any great surprise to what was announced or, you know, what was in the official numbers. I also think that people are starting to wind down now. You know, we're now
really
at the 22nd. Certainly here. I think globally not a lot's happening as well. It's very interesting to go through the news now, but I think we're going into a kind of indifferent December. So the volumes here are very light, extremely light. So, but that's the market.
I think a lot of attention
on sport, though.
But certainly in London, I think volumes will be pretty light because at lunchtime people are going to say, look, boss, and he'll say, I know what you're going to say, off you go down the pub. And they would have done, and quite right too, because it is only once every 4 years and you've got to allow a little leeway. And talking about people winding down, my email inbox is getting lesser and lesser every single day. And it's not even December yet, but let's talk about the Barlow World story. I don't know if you like Barlow World. They're unbundling a company called Zeda, Z-E-D-A, not the ER version.
They were trying to sell Avis. Focusing on what remains their operations now, which is heavy metal, which is Caterpillar and mining equipment. You know, that seems to be the favored area. I think that when they put Avis on the block, things were really tight here from a tourist point of view, but they picked up dramatically. So Avis had a very good year. They have been listed before. So, this is the easiest way to get rid of them. Say, okay, yeah, shareholders, you have them. We're going to apply for a listing. But, I mean, whether or not one can make a go of a higher company, I'm not sure. They've tried it before, you know. Is it going to be of great appeal? I think if tourism picks up, maybe it will be associated with City Lodge and with Sun International and that. But I think this is just the easy choice is just to get rid of it. So I'm surprised I couldn't find a buyer. I'm surprised. And Lindsay, I think it's also indicative of what's happening here. I think things are going to get tighter with tightening of interest rates and that. I think demand for motor vehicles, just general consumer demand is going to get a lot harder than we've seen, than the previous results reflect. That's Barlow World,
We're talking about interest rates. We've got the Monetary Policy Committee decision from the South African Reserve Bank on Thursday after a two-day meeting. And the way I saw this, early on I saw there were three retailers in the top five movers to the upside. It was TFG, Mr. Price, and what was the other one, Truus? Anyway, there were three clothing retailers, and I thought maybe they think that the end of the interest rate rising cycle is upon us, but I'm not so sure. Because they're fairly well ahead of the curve, as people say, the MPC. They probably manage their situation better than certainly the United States and Europe has. I don't know. What do you think? 50 basis points on Thursday to the upside?
It could be. They're not going to do nothing. I can't see we got the inflation numbers coming out soon, but I don't think they're going to do zero. So with that it will push the prime rate over 10%. So, you know, it's there's no doubt that a lot of people who have got debt on their balance sheets, householders who went out, you know, when interest rates were pretty low, are going to start finding it gripping them a little harder now, or hurting them a little harder. So if you've got a mortgage and you've got a house, and remember today some of the motor vehicles that you've bought cost actually more than the house, it's getting expensive.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know if I mentioned it to you last week, I was when Transaction Capital came out with their numbers, and you know, everybody was glowing about the presentation, and I don't take anything, again, I have to qualify myself, I don't take anything away from their management in any way whatsoever. You know, generally our retailers, and we've got some companies with good management, but conditions are tightening. You know, that's what I'm worried about, and that I can't see people going out and now buying the kind of motor vehicles we did in this year. And the late 2021, you know, we saw things pick up. I think it's going to be a lot harder to finance them. And I would include second-hand or previously owned motor vehicles as well. You know, in fact, I think debt, you know, to obtain finance is probably a lot harder for those cars than for new cars. So, yeah, it's one's got to review where we are, you know, and I'm talking specifically South Africa with interest rates at these kind of levels.
David, yeah. One thing I didn't mention, and you've been recently exposed to the South African private healthcare system. Netcare came out with their results today. I forgot to mention those. Up, the share price up over 4%. Well, what did you make of them if you had a chance to look at them?
It's over 6%, nearly 7%. Look, things are improving.
Yeah.
And reasonable trade. I can't say, I'm not quite sure where it came from and what the, you know, what the appeal was. Admittedly, it's, you know, sorry, I think might have been, I haven't gone through them in greater detail, but perhaps elective surgery is coming back and people starting to fill the theaters again. That's where they make all the money. But when I looked at their, when I looked last week at their trading update, there was nothing that really appealed to me. So there might have been something in the presentation that got, you know, buyers back into the market. Because even in life healthcare as well, you know, it was just, nothing really in those results that made you want to go out and buy. So I've got to go in, you know, we'll have a presentation tomorrow from Netcare or have a closer look at what the, you know, what analysts saw in these results. But I couldn't find anything, you know, outstanding there. So, I don't know.
Okay, well, you can have a look overnight or tomorrow. But that's a big, that's quite a big move. My screen is 15 minutes delayed. It still says 4.1% higher. I was talking, there we go, 6.75% now. It's just refreshed itself. I was talking to somebody whose daughter had recently moved to the Netherlands, proper Afrikaans gentleman. And he said he thought the Dutch health service was awful, but I have to tell you something about healthcare, and this is against the UK, because the UK healthcare system, the NHS, is in tatters. I've got a broken toe, and I wanted to get, and it's not going away, so they're going to operate on it. It's nothing.
Operate?
Yeah, they're going to operate. Wait. Because it's quite a bad break, and so they said, come along and we'll have a look at you. So the first thing I did, they sent me to five different people, all of whom were women. First one, a pharmacist, and said, okay, what medication are you taking? I said, I'm not taking any, except for one a pill. It's called pill in a pocket in the Netherlands. If you have a slight heart palpitation, which I do occasionally, you take the pill and it stops it. So I said that, and she said, what's the level and what's the name of it? I said, I don't know the level or the name of it. She said, okay, give me your pharmacist's name, or rather where you go. And she checked that I was actually telling the truth. Okay, so there was that. Then I went to a nurse, and she took my blood pressure, and she attached things to me to measure my heart rate. all fine. Then I went to the anaesthetist and said, what do you want? Do you want to be general anaesthetic or just half your leg, or do you want something? I got three options. I said, you know what? I don't want to be under general anaesthetic. It only takes 20 minutes, this operation. So I'd like to see what's going on. So they're going to do the half leg thing. Then after that, another nurse who explained the procedure, what was going to happen, and am I okay with it? I said, yes, fine. Then I had to go down to another nurse on the ground floor to get my blood taken. Every single one was on time. It took around about 50 minutes, five people I saw, and they phoned me this morning and said, Mr. Williams, are you okay for November the 29th? They said, I'll get back to you. There's not a chance. I'm not doing it during the World Cup. But but the efficiency of it was extraordinary. In the UK, because of the backlog, I would have had to wait, I don't know, could be 6 months, could be 2 years, because this is not, it's not an essential operation. So I don't know. I despair for the UK. I despair for the South African Public Health Service, maybe not for the private administered hospitals. But anyway, it's interesting that Netcare has done so well. David, what else
are
we
going to, I'm going to have to go into that little detail. I don't know whether it was a dividend. I don't know what brought buyers into these levels, whether they feel it's reached very low levels. I was looking, you know, just to reiterate, I was looking at the charts of both Life Healthcare and Netcare. And if you look at it, it's one of these charts that literally goes from the top left hand to the bottom right hand. Brought about obviously by, in fact, this started to happen before COVID. I mean, the Great Fall. Yes. And subsequent to that, nothing has really, you know, been happening in great detail. So we're still in a very, very narrow channel, down at the 1400 to 1500 level. So I'm not sure what got it all sparked up today, but I mean, you know, if you look at that, it's not the kind of chart that inspires. And again, I was at Netcare recently for a procedure and I had nothing bad to say about them. You know, they were really good. And so please, you know, whatever I say about their share price has got nothing to do with the quality of service that I received.
Very diplomatically described. Well done. Let's have a look at the spot prices now, David. The dollar rand is 17.31. The British pound against the rand, 20.45. Euro rand, 17.75. Euro dollar, 102.50, which is a 1.1% fall for the euro against the US dollar. British pound against the US dollar, 118.10. What else have we got here? Going on to commodities, gold is down $14 an ounce with the stronger dollar at $17.38. Platinum is $984 an ounce, down $17. And palladium has fallen nearly $100 an ounce to $18.39, and that is over 5% on the downside. We'll delve into what's going on internationally in a moment, but I'll give you the prices first. I've got the US 10-year Treasury bond yield at 3.81%. Which is, that's nothing really. The South African 10-year ahead of the MPC decision on Thursday, 10.40%. Again, very, very little going on there. This is the one that really interests me, and it's the other commodities. Brent crude oil down 4.8% to $83.40. West Texas crude, $76.04 per barrel, down 5.1%, David. Yeah. And look at the other ones. Copper down nearly 2%, coal down 2.5%, and so it goes on. The stronger dollar obviously is a factor, but
China.
Oil to fall 4-5% across the complex, that's a really, really big and really significant move. Yeah.
It could be to do with Chinese demand. And you have to look at this also against, in the whole energy complex against, a European winter that's about to come. And we're not quite sure how cold it's going to be and what kind of, how they're going to cope and what demand will be for gas. You know, and I would associate all of them with energy prices. But I think there's also a deep concern now about China, whether they're going to tighten up. A couple of deaths and, you know, it can swing the whole thing. And that's why the markets, I think, have broadly been down. Lindsay, I'm also going to, by saying what I'm saying now.
Yeah.
I did quite a bit of reading over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I come out of there completely confused. You know, when I say confused, unable to make any kind of clarity of where this market's going. There's so many conflicting views. And what I loved about it is that there was quite a bit in The Economist, but they had an article on inflation. But in the conclusion, which I actually tweeted, it said, everyone can agree on one thing about the past year. It has demonstrated just how poorly economists understand inflation, including both what causes it and what causes it to persist. And, you know, it is likely, therefore, that economists will also struggle to predict when inflation will cool, you know, and so they go on, meaning that, but putting a danger sign, you know, that without understanding it, one's not quite sure what, you know, what action they'll do. And I think that's kind of being reflected in the markets now. No one has confidence that anybody really has a good grip of where we are. And for that reason, it makes markets pretty volatile, you know, anything can happen kind of situation. So,
there's an air of confusion. I mean, you can say anything and you might be right. And if you're wrong, then no one will condemn you because everyone else is wrong as well.
Yeah. I feel that kind of mood, you know, I feel, that each day you wake up and you're not quite sure what's going to happen. And I think it's getting very dull and, you know, and that's why markets are just kind of bumbling along, going absolutely nowhere with no clear direction. I listened to UBS came out with their views on 2023 and 2024. Now it was like 350 pages of those kind of charts. You can say it, you know, with arrows pointing in all directions and all colors all over a spreadsheet. Couldn't make any kind of sense of it. The only thing is I listened to a short interview with the American Economist, you know, from UBS. And, you know, rising out of that, he actually thought that, you know, he thinks that, and I hope I heard him wrong before I misquote him. And that, you know, he mentioned growth's going to be weak, housing's coming down, inventories are rising, and on top of that, you know, the Fed's going to pile interest rate hikes on top of it. So although the labor market's resilient, he sees it coming down and starting to slow. But he saw unemployment going up to 5.5%, and he says the Fed doesn't like unemployment. So I hope I'm not – I hope I'm getting it wrong – right, you know, what he said. But what did come out is that he sees – you know, he saw interest rates being slashed by mid-year, next year. Yeah, I know. So I read that, and then I read The Economist, which is completely different, you know, completely different view. And then you say, okay, you know, who do I follow? Will rates come down, or are they likely to persist?
Well, I have to say, David, looking at the oil price now, I mean, it's now just a very live update. It's 83. It's just about to go down below $83 a barrel. It peaked at 139. Yeah. It mucked about in the sort of 110 to 120 area for a long time, and it's in a bear market now. Oil is in a bear market, and that's the biggest driver of inflation, according to the parameters of the CPI basket in numerous countries. So we are now getting to the point where inflation is going to fall off a cliff, and it'll be down below 5% by the first quarter or second quarter of next year, and therefore interest rates will start to come down again, I think.
Well, you'd think that. You'd think that, and I'm on your side from that point of view. So, okay, but the Fed's not giving any kind of ground and will persist on maintaining rates at a high level.
So, yes, but these are the people, David, that have been so far behind. These are the people that said inflation was transitory. So they can just say one day, okay, we're going to keep our inflation targeting going, we're going to keep rates high, and then the next week we'll say, oh, sorry, we got it wrong again. down we come.
Well, there you are. You're explaining it very articulately. Thank you very much. You've got to translate that into a strategy, you know, and and anything can happen.
Well, you know, look at interest rate sensitive stocks. That is my and stocks that's.
Anyway.
But you've got a different. You've got a difficult decision to make, David, because there are certain stocks that are interest rate sensitive, but also GDP sensitive as well. So you've got to have growth and low inflation. But if you have low inflation because of lack of demand, that means that GDP isn't going to go up. So you, I think you've just got to go dividend sensitive next year. That's my opinion.
Look, where I'm taking my direction from, okay? So I'm not a dividend buying person. It's in the article as well in this week's Economist, and sorry for pushing it.
Not at all.
There was a wonderful article on the future of motor cars.
Yeah.
And fascinating in the sense, and I'm going to try and put it into a soundbite, in the sense that before any kind of software was embedded. In other words, you might have it in your engine already if you have a motor car, which you haven't got. You know, in the motor car would be one that controlled the fuel, that controlled the lights, whatever it is. So it was embedded. You know, it might have been have sensors there. Now the whole motor industry is transitioning to what they call a platform software. In other words, software that you can keep changing all the time, upgrading and so on, you know, that would be driven by data and also to services. You know, the Chinese are intent on making traveling in a motor car like traveling in a theater. You know, you can sit in your motor car and watch movies or whatever it is, all of this streamed. So to put it in a nutshell, you're moving from the old way of making motor cars, which was by mechanical engineers, now to software engineers. In other words, software technology, because you haven't got those moving parts anymore that you had in an engine. So why am I saying this?
I don't know.
So for me, this is where one's got to focus your investment strategy and saying, look, we're going to get this complete transition, complete, you know, turnover or turnaround in the way that we did things, you know, moving towards a lot more technology in motor vehicles. We know we're going that way in energy. We know we're going that way in health. So for me, it's the challenge is to identify who's going to benefit, because these are not going to be slowed down. This is not going to be slowed down by interest rates and issues like that. You know, technology will still drive on. So for me, that's my comfort area, is to say, okay.
Well, don't look at motor cars, David. You know, think laterally, like you think of ASML, you think of tech and big tech. They're being fed by ASML. So what you've got to do is look at the companies that are building the software for the cars. I don't know if Tesla, for example, because it's the most high profile, has an in-house software development division. I'm sure it has. Or does it buy it from outside? Does it outsource it? I don't know. But you've got to, I think, laterally, like people always used to say, don't buy an airline. Have a look at the airport and buy the land around the airport, because the airport is going to expand and you'll make a fortune out of that. It's that sort of lateral thinking, I think.
I that's where I'm saying that. That's the only place that I can find any kind of understanding is around those kind of areas. So look, at the moment, I mean, markets are, it's, you know, we're still in for quite a bit of volatility, but you have to think, well, not laterally, and you have to think ahead.
Yes, you should.
Because if you're going to try call it on a day-to-day basis, you're not going to be able to, you know, it's going to really kill you.
Okay, I'm getting bored with the markets, and I'm not with you.
Yeah, me too.
Give me the JSE closing indices, please.
Well, we closed down about 0.88 at 71938. Hurt by resources, which were down quite considerably. The resource 10 down almost 2%, 1.94%. The rest of the market also coming down, with the exception of banks, which was slightly firmer. So volumes, let me see what else. Consumers also under a bit of pressure. I think if you look at the industrial side, Naspers and Process were down, you know, quite a lot on the worries about China again. And Richemont also came down a bit in together with Europe. But there were pockets of gains. You mentioned some of the retailers and that. But broadly, it was a down day. Value traded today, Lindsay, and this is – you know, very, very light, just over 16 billion. Mm-hmm. Friday, we had the same kind of thing. There's no trade going on in the JSE at the moment. One can sense it. I think nobody wants to do anything. No one's in the mood to buy anything. No one feels any confidence ahead. We are, you might not know it, Al, but we are being absolutely hammered by load shedding.
Yeah.
I mean, it's now two or three times a day.
I've heard so.
How
can you grow an economy? And how many years has it been
now?
You've
got no idea.
I do have an idea, but on the other hand, are people just saying, oh, well, it's another thing? No, you know what I used to do when I lived in South Africa, which was a long time ago? I used to say, okay, well, here I am where I live. I'm going to drive somewhere else. So, for example, if I wanted to watch a football match, I would drive to another area and sit down the pub and watch it there. But that's no way to live.
No.
I mean, I'm using a very frivolous and it's a meaningless example. But when you think of poor people that have to heat their houses, you know, and et cetera, and industries that have to turn their machines on in the morning and that sort of thing and make whatever they make, their widgets and stuff, it's a disgrace, David.
Yeah, I know. It is. And it's a reflection of the people that ran the company, you know, the country. Mm-hmm. It's not, there's no other excuse other than negligence, the corruption that absolutely tore this this place around. You know, in the 1980s, 90s, I mean, it was one of our proudest institutions.
Yes.
It's just been savaged.
Decimated.
And it's decimated. It's, you know, literally close to complete and total collapse. And
because of stealing, David.
And incompetence. First of all, incompetence, and then corruption and stealing at every level. You know, in other words, can you imagine an institution that size with so many outlets? Every outlet has got somebody that's been helping themselves. You know, and to undo it is just so impossible.
Okay.
And I don't think the government, with all fairness, I don't think the government has got the appetite and the energy to actually get on top of things now. You know, they've been in power for too long. They bloated. They lazy.
They're a monopoly.
You know, by lazy. Yeah, because of that. They don't want to, you know, to run a business, to actually get your, to put on overalls and scrub the floors and do that kind of thing takes a bit of effort. You know, I think they're too royal for that, you know, too aristocratic to do that. So I think a lot has to be done here if you want to save this country. At the moment, it's sinking. You know, it's sinking. So, and please, I'm not exaggerating. When you haven't got electricity, you know, when you haven't got the means to actually grow an economy, then you've got to know how dangerous it is.
Okay.
Anyway,
let's lift things up.
Let's
talk about the World Cup now. Last night's game between Ecuador and the host Qatar was a lackluster affair. Qatar are simply awful. Mm. Ecuador looked quite a fun team. They're quite fast and quite skillful, and they won 2-0. Mm. But then the real World Cup kicked off today with England versus Iran. It's just finished. Mm. It was 6-2 to England. England had 7 shots on goal, scored 6 times.
Did they score a goal, Iran, in the last minute?
They scored a goal, yeah. They scored in the 100th minute.
Bad.
Yeah, 90 plus 10, it was a penalty.
Yeah.
Anyway, they did score. And it was a really good fun game. England looked absolutely superb. And the interesting thing, I mean, there's several interesting things. First of all, BBC went to a primary school in the UK, up in Yorkshire, actually. And we were talking to all the kids, and the kids were singing songs. It was one of those things that the BBC do so well. You know, they go all around the country and, you know, involve communities. And I don't know if you remember a little girl that was featured because she was filmed singing Sweet Caroline during the Women's World Cup, or Women's Euros, excuse me. And she became quite famous, and she was there. It was her school, and she was there and dancing away and everything. She can't keep still. She's a maniac. But anyway, they said, what do you think the score's going to be today? And she said, I've been looking at it, and I'm looking at the players and everything, and I think it's going to be 7-3 to England. And it comes out at 6-2, which is a pretty good prediction, I would say. The game itself was really good fun. The issues I have is, first of all, FIFA telling the captains of all the teams not to wear a rainbow armband. It's just one armband with a rainbow thing which says, which basically says, everybody is welcome to the football community. It's not saying you've got to do this, you've got to do that. It says everybody's welcome. Dare I say it's sort of declaration of compassion and love. And FIFA says, no, you can't do that. Why? Because they've been put under pressure by the Qataris. And I don't like that. The second thing is that they've had, well, since the Russia World Cup, 4.5 years to get it ready. And the app, the FIFA ticket app, went down as England fans were trying to get in. So hundreds and hundreds of England fans missed the first 20 minutes of the game. And that's why the stadium was, you know, relatively empty. So that was really bad.
Oh, it looked like that. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, okay. So that was it. So FIFA, as I said in a tweet today, FIFA is a four-letter word beginning with F. Rainbow, the rainbow thing, the tickets. And I don't know. It just seems that they lurch from one disaster to another. But I have to say that the football is taking over a little bit, and I try to forget when I watch the match. You watch some of it, right?
Yeah, no, I watched most of it. I did watch most of it, and no, I was thrilled with the goals. I'm just concerned that they let through two, regardless. You know, and there were quite a few shots that Iran did have. I mean, you know, they weren't that bad. I mean, yeah, they were thumped, but I don't like it when you let in two goals, you know, even if you score six.
Well, the first goal was by a chap called Taremi, who's a 21-year-old, and he's a real whiz kid. He's going to get snapped up by a serious European team, so that wasn't so bad. The last one was a penalty in the 100th minute, you know, 10th minute of injury time, and England had brought on five substitutes to rest their good players. The other interesting thing, David, was the first five goals were all scored by black players in England, which I love. You got Marcus Rashford, Bukayo Saka from Arsenal, Raheem Sterling from Chelsea, and Jude Bellingham from Borussia Dortmund. What a diverse team that England have, and they look pretty good, apart from a little bit of defensive frailty, I would say.
If you think of the history of British soccer, how the racism there.
Oh God.
You know, and when black players first made their mark in British soccer, with Barnes being the first one at Liverpool, I mean, and it continues today. So,
well, he's actually started at Watford, and what happened was,
when he played for Watford
before he got transferred to Liverpool, he was playing on the left wing. He was number 11, and I remember it was a game at St James's Park away to Newcastle. Yeah. And he was pelted with bananas as he went into the went into the corner. Yeah. And you don't. I don't quite understand how big a man you have to be to put up with that rubbish. And it still goes on today. I mean, Raheem Sterling, he plays for Chelsea now, but he was subjected when he went to take a corner to the monkey chants by the Chelsea supporters, and Chelsea had and they found video footage of who it was and barred them for life from Stamford Bridge, the Chelsea stadium. Yeah. But it still goes on.
But
you
when
see.
You think of that, and you think that five goals were scored by
black players,
it shows you.
It's very good. Anyway,
well, Grealish messed it up, you know. And there was no Kane. There was no Kane anyway.
No, but he played a captain's role and he was assisting and everything. No, he played very well. He was taken off because he got kicked on the ankle as the Iranians became dirtier and dirtier as the game went on. But it was good fun. So at the moment we've got Senegal against the Netherlands. So I've been watching England, my home country. I've got my Netherlands, my adopted country, and then later because my surname is Williams, I associate myself with the Welsh, so they're playing against the United States. So I've got three teams on the second day. My cup runneth over, Shapiro.
Brilliant.
Okay, lovely. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, and that was Shapiro World Incorporating the 5 o'clock Shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.